Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Time for TV on the radio.
Helmsman Packer, take us into that asteroid gas cluster.
Into the cluster? That's suicide, sir.
It is our only chance. That gas cluster is charged with ionized pyrene particles. If our shields hold, we can use them to increase our photon intensity. Packer, increase thrusters.
Shields at 43%.
It'll tear the ship apart, Captain!
Walton, you are a space fleet officer. Act accordingly.
Shields at 32%.
No, that's not following.
Packer, turn us around. Alaska charged photon bolts.
Bolts charged, Captain.
Fire.
Now, that's not as crap as it sounds, because it's not what it appears to be. That's actually one of the latest episodes of Black Mirror. The final six episodes of season four are streaming from tomorrow on Netflix. James joins us once again. Interestingly, that's directed by... what's her name?
That's not the one directed by her. No,
that's not the one directed by Jodie Foster. Yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
That's the one directed by a British guy whose name I can't remember, but I did look him up.
I forgot her name. You forgot his name. Yeah. So that's,
all
that
I
makes it even.
Yeah. He was linked to a remake of Oliver, the exclamation mark Oliver, but I can't remember quite what his name is. But that is the first, I think that's the opening episode of this run of six episodes. And I've only seen two, despite the fact that they had made all six of them available to me. It was my Christmas holidays.
Hey,
as well.
Of course.
But I will say, the thing about Black Mirror, and Black Mirror as a show has sort of kind of like a rabid bunch of like its fandom out there is massive. People absolutely love it to the point of it being almost like a Teflon when it comes to criticism. Kind of a problem with Black Mirror is that you're always kind of just waiting for this twist to come along. It's a bit of a Shyamalan-like type conundrum, because you know at some point there's going to be this very big twist, and the twist in large parts is almost always negative. So what I find when I'm watching episodes of Black Mirror is, I know I've really enjoyed it if at the end of it I kind of wish it had been longer, or they'd made a feature film out of this. And a lot of critics didn't particularly like this opening episode, the USS Callister one. I actually found it very fun, and the premise I thought was interesting. It's mostly about a tech guy, this sort of nerdy boss who's working in a tech company, not getting respect, and he's created this online game called Infinity, and in his own home he's running a kind of parallel sub game of it, in which he has recreated his favorite Star Trek-esque, you know, space opera type, you know, space soap opera, we'll say, and he has manned the ship in it, the USS Callister, with his co-workers, or digital versions of them. Of course, not everything is as it would be, and to say what that would be to do a massive disservice to the show and the people who are going to watch it. So that one is about an hour and 15 minutes long. Archangel is the second one I saw. That is the one directed by Jodie Foster. That one sees a premise in which a mother to a young to this young girl. The mother is played by Rosemary DeWitt, who people would know from Mad Men and La La Land. She's this actress whose name you might not know, but you certainly know her to see. And in it, very early on, her daughter goes missing, and she takes up this, but is returned immediately safe and sound. And she takes this opportunity to insert a chip into her daughter, which therefore gives her the ability to see where her daughter is at all times, like a GPS tracker, but also to see what her daughter is seeing through her daughter's eyes, and even put sort of parental controls on that. Blurring out things that might be dangerous. And they follow this premise through from sort of not quite infancy, but early childhood through to teenage years, and what this sort of means for the mother and daughter relationship as they sort of, as this goes on, and what privacy means, and do you really want to know what your teenager is doing at all times, really? Even if you think you should, you know, if they're missing or something like that, like what, certainly everyone is entitled to privacy, that kind of thing. Now, I don't know if either of those episodes will be as sort of as will grab the people's attention as much as one of the episodes in the last run of Six did, because this is, you know, this is the second, it's kind of like this is officially, you would argue, the fifth season, because seasons don't really mean anything to Black Mirror. I mean it was a first run of three episodes, then a second run of three episodes, then a Christmas special, then it jumped from Channel 4 to Netflix with this one season that was divided up into two parts of Six, which is too many numbers for this time of year. So whatever it is, I don't know if this run of Six is going to grab the public's imagination as much as San Junipero, which is this double Emmy award winning episode that came in the last run, which was about kind of again a virtual reality world with these two women, one of them discovering her sort of nascent lesbian sexuality kind of thing. And that one really struck a chord with viewers, particularly because it seemed for the first time to embrace the idea that not all technology is evil and terrible. And the Black Mirror that it is referring to in the title of the show is this concept of screens. You know, it is technology ostensibly, but it's this like screen in your hand, screen on your wall.
Can that be a limitation in it? Because every episode is quite high concept. There's a big pointy headed idea at the center of it. Which perhaps means that they have to sacrifice sometimes nuance or character development, or, you know, you caring about the people involved in this rather than their pawns exploring an idea.
Yeah, a criticism I read of one of the newer episodes is it's one with Andrea Riseborough, who's another actress who people will definitely know. She's a real, like, accent chameleon, if I can merge those two things together. And in the episode that she's starring in, she plays a woman who witnesses a hit and run involving her friend and helps to cover it up, and years later is doing everything she can to stop the secret being exposed. And I read a criticism of that episode was that it takes this, you know, relatively well-worn conceit for dramas, you know, keeping a secret for years is not anything particularly new. But because the premise of the show is constantly built on technology and the nefarious input of technology, mostly, that they sort of just wedge in this piece of, you know, speculative future technology that comes out of nowhere, that just adds really nothing to the very finely honed plot, but simply they just have to do it because that is the purpose of the show.
Yeah.
Now, what you see more, I think, in this run of Six that you didn't see in the others is branching out into kind of genre blending. So previously we've had specifically Black Mirror, you would describe as, for the most part, a science fiction show. It's definitely a science fiction anthology. Occasionally, maybe a bits of thriller here and there. But specifically, I think in this back lot of this run of episodes, you get a kind of, you get a sort of sci-fi pastiche, definitely, in the USS Callister, right? But you also get strong sort of threads of horror throughout this run of Six. So I think the limitations of the, you know, the strengths of the show are also its limitations. Because if you are going to build a show entirely around how bad technology can be for you, you are limited with, you know, how far you can take that idea.
Mm.
Now, Charlie Brooker, don't get me wrong, he has shown himself to be very, to have great foresight, even in the short years that this show has been on the air, to the kind of stories that can come out. One needs to only look at the very first episode, which is the one with the Prime Minister and the royal family, and getting that back with something involving a pig.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen every day. Mm. However, I do think the show is very well crafted, and one of its strengths is that it's only as good as the episode you're watching. Even a bad episode, it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, it's sort of 60 to 70 to 80 minutes of TV, and if it's a bad one, you know, probably won't talk about it and you'll never watch it again. But the really good ones, you might sit down and watch again.
And Charlie Buckner is, well, but you must say a genius.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
I think it's fair. Right, a couple of bits of TV news. What was the most popular show over the Christmas then?
Well, the most singular popular broadcast was actually the Queen's Speech, which I don't know if that means what that means for Brexit and the political climate we're in, that people are looking to, you know, an 80-odd euro, or is she 90? I don't know. Anyway, but
300-year-old woman.
Institution, anyway. Mm. But the most popular show was unsurprisingly Mrs. Brown's Boys, which topped the poll, or topped the ratings both on both sides of the Irish Sea. It got about 6.8 million people in the UK and 700,000 people here. I think it broadcast about 15 minutes earlier in Ireland to sort of hook in the Irish audience so that they don't, you know, jump ship. But, you know, I think what was interesting about Mrs. Brown's Boys is I'm no, I'm no fan of the show, but I'm always a defender of it because I admire this empire that was built over a very long period of time.
Yeah.
Even if I don't like the show, I like that it can build its audience in this very organic way. But they had a bit of a conundrum this year themselves because Rory Cowan had decided very publicly during the summer to leave the show, seemingly on very good terms, but just wasn't interested in doing it anymore. But his character, Rory, was still going to be in the show. So it was a bit of a Patrick Ewing, am I using the right character
yes,
moment?
Yeah.
And the way they decided to do it was through a very ham-fisted and deliberately over-the-top plastic surgery type thing where you had like a Claude Rains Invisible Man in the bandages type thing going on, which I think people seemed to want to quite well.
Oh, no, that's quite good. And Louis C.K., Louis C.K. has lost a gig, which is probably not a huge surprise.
No, it isn't, but this one is quite funny. So, right, everyone will know the various allegations that have been made to the point of, I believe, accepted now, really, this harassment claims made by five women, and he has lost ties with HBO and Netflix, who are now refusing to carry his comedy specials, and his rather poorly named movie, I Love You Daddy, was dropped by distributors just days before it was released, and now Disney are cutting ties with him as well. So if people are in any way aware of their children's cartoons, this is one they might know. It's called Gravity Falls. It has a big cult audience, and rather weirdly, the character played by Louis C.K. in it was called the horrifying, sweaty, one-armed monstrosity.
Which many people have described him as in some of those allegations. Wow.
I mean, it would lead you to think that maybe the writers were
must have known.
But anyway, so he had pre-recorded, we'll say, his vocal parts for three episodes that are due to come out in the coming months. They have been recast with the show's executive producer taking over. But not only that, they're going to redub all of the past episodes that he's appeared in as well and completely cut him out from the show entirely.
Right, we do have to take a break. A couple more shows to talk about after this.
Betty Davis looks old enough to be my mother.
If Crawford couldn't ruin the picture, nobody could.
I want the dirt.
They didn't actually need a reason to hate each other. It was chemical.
That was a feud
of biblical proportions.
They're burning up the screen, Jack.
Pure, naked rancor. I love it.
Anchor. Todd!
Did you get it?
That's a feud, Betty and Joan. It starts on Saturdays, 9:45 on BBC Two. So the Betty and Joan are, obviously,
Betty Davis and Joan Crawford,
yeah.
And played by Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange. And I think Susan Sarandon is like inspired casting as Betty Davis because she even has sort of a physical likeness to her and does a very good kind of impression of her. Now, this isn't actually starting on Saturday. It's a couple of weeks into the run.
Ah, right. Sorry, my mistake.
That's my fault. I meant to talk about this earlier and it sort of had bypassed me. But this week's episode is actually a particularly good episode to try and get into the show on, because it deals with the 1963, we'll say, Academy Awards, when Betty Davis was nominated for Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and Joan Crawford, famously, infamously, wasn't nominated. And this is sort of where their feud hits its absolute peak. And it's kind of, you know, a story that's like 50 odd years old at this point, so I don't feel too bad about kind of spoiling it. But essentially what happened was Joan Crawford went to all of the other four nominees who were nominated for Best Actress and convinced each and every one of them that if they won, they would let her go up and collect the award on their behalf. So it leads to
how
this.
Do you even get them to do that?
And it explores how she got them to do that in the episode particularly well. And I will say, this is made by Ryan Murphy, who is perhaps the most prolific TV. Him and Shonda Rhimes are like the most prolific TV makers of the moment.
Mm.
And with him, I have a very kind of love-hate affair. He is most famously known, I guess, for American Horror Story, which I have abandoned a couple of seasons back and don't really feel any loss of not watching it anymore. But he made also then last year the O.J. Simpson, you know, the American Crime Story, People versus O.J.,
yeah,
which is phenomenally good, improves episode on episode, and is coming back very soon with the murder of Gianni Versace. And I think he is at his absolute best when he's able to take real life characters and explore them and wring the drama out of them rather than create his own characters. I think when he's sort of unfettered, he tends to just go completely over the top and overblown. And that's, you know, I say that with full knowledge that this is as camp and vampy a show as you can imagine. It is about two catty actresses in their sort of, I think they were in their 50s rather than in their 60s as Lang and Sarandon are. They've aged up a little bit for the TV show, but it's really well made and really well acted and crafted. It's like, it's a very polished piece of period drama with excellent costumes. But particularly what's good about it are these sort of central performances, I would say, that have been very much overlooked, not in the sort of nominating stakes of the TV awards, because this has been nominated for Golden Globes and Emmys and so on, but it kind of lost, it had the sort of the rug pulled out under its feet by Big Little Lies, which came out of nowhere, was this massive power wattage cast and really seemed to strike a chord. I think this is the better show of the two of them because it explores a more interesting thing, but it explores this role of aging women in Hollywood, particularly in the early 1960s, when you had these massive stars from bygone eras. You know, Betty Davis had, I think, already two Oscars, and Joan Crawford had won her own one as well. And they were sort of beginning to fade from obscurity, despite having been the biggest stars of their day, and how they just basically, the only way they could get a picture made was for the two of them to come together and be deliberately catty and mean to each other. And then sort of on set, it all begins to fall apart when rivalries get stoked up. And it really explores this idea of, you know, like women supporting women and women fighting women. And it does that extremely well, while also showing where we are in a TV year that has been very much dominated by women's stories. You would argue the biggest shows of the year are this, The Handmaid's Tale, Big Little Lies. They are women-focused shows. And it's quite interesting to see that, in this 50-year gap between how far it has gone, because Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon are aging Hollywood stars, both Oscar winners in their own right. And where is their salvation now? It's not in coming together to create this sort of camp movie, but actually it's in the TV land, because that is now this new medium where very credible actors go.
Now, and in the O.J. Simpson, what was really impressive about The People versus O.J. was that it humanized a lot of people, where it'd be awfully easy just to, to give cartoon depictions of these people. Does he resist that temptation here, given the largeness of these two characters? So they're not quite humanized. You don't always get the fact that, they were people with feelings.
Yeah, I do think you get a good sense of, more so of who Joan Crawford is and her sort of sense of inferiority. Because I think Betty Davis was this sort of very regal, almost Catherine Hepburn style star who had theatrical training and had risen up and spoke with that kind of like faux British American accent that people did in the 1930s and then on. Joan Crawford, on the other hand, sort of was this beauty who was like scrubbing toilets in an all girls private school in her youth because nobody could afford and had kind of checkered history with her stepfather and all this kind of thing. And you really see that in her character, it's this woman who's always worried about where's my next paycheck going to come from, even though she's, you would assume fairly well
very
off.
Wealthy, yeah.
So you do get that humanizing aspect of it. You also see her relationship with her housekeeper, we'll say Mamacita, who is this sort of very eccentric German woman who sort of puts up with her tantrums and ranting, but also sort of you would see sort of is a reflection of Joan's own insecurities as well. Then you get to see their interactions with their children as well. Unfortunately, you don't get a like no wire hangers moment from Mommy Dearest style with Joan Crawford and her children, but you do understand the fraught relationship she has with her adopted children. The same with Betty Davis. Her daughter is Beattie. She's played by Kiernan Shipna, who is the daughter in Mad Men, Sally Draper, who was brilliant in Mad Men and sort of, I think, could very much be a star of the future type thing. She has her relationship with her mother. She she's going off to marry this guy and her mother's having absolutely none of it. So it is humanized, definitely, but it explores definitely Hollywood's complete and utter ignorance of older women and what to do with them. I mean, even today, there's a handful of actresses in their 60s and 70s who are still working, you know. Mm. But it, I guess once you reach this age of like 45, 55, until you get to 70 something, when Hollywood might have a clue what to do with you, you're very much stuck doing whatever you can to make, to keep your star in ascendancy or at least plateauing. And this explores exactly that and how fraught it was in the 1960s to try and keep your star afloat.
Yeah, it does sound very good. And I would assume as well, given there's already a couple of episodes have played out, you wouldn't probably miss that much by going into episode 3 because you know about who these women
you
were.
You do
anyway.
Know about it. And there's a million ways to find out about their rivalry and what happened on the set of whatever happened to Baby Jane. You know, even just watch the movie.
Yes. That'll tell you enough. Right, we'll move on to our third show of today. It is Senior Moments. You can catch up with previous episodes on the RTE player. Here's a clip.
Could you help me with this here? My fiancé in Russia sent me a letter there. If you could read that for me.
Okay.
I want to see, where am I flying to?
It says, Dear Valentine, I am so excited to see you, my big handsome man.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the diamond ring you sent me.
Yeah.
I had it priced. I love it. I wish you had
it. Yeah, I should hope she would like it because I paid 25 grand for it. Yeah.
Okay, I wish I had earrings to match. She's very cheeky, isn't she?
Yeah, I got them. No, I can't be flashing these all over the place. What do you think,
oh,
doing?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah?
God, are you mad?
No, I'm not. No.
Okay, right. I will not meet you in Moscow airport, but my brother, Gustav, and Victor will meet you there.
There you go. That's Senior Moments. This is basically a candid camera show, but the people doing it are older.
Yeah, which is not actually even an original idea either, because there's an ITV show called Off the Rockers, which is exactly the same thing, which is itself a spin-off of an American show of the exact same name named Betty White's Off the Rockers, which is exactly the same thing. So, I mean, candid camera shows are not original. The concept isn't original. I would say if you just were to stumble upon this, maybe you'd get a good 10 minutes of enjoyment out of it. But this is a 3-part series they've created after sort of launching, you know, quote unquote, the show a couple of months ago or a year ago, I'm not sure, with a sort of one-off special. And really, I think there's not enough in here to merit 3 episodes of a sketch show or a candid camera show, because essentially, the premise is, aren't old people funny? Let's make them interact with young people and do funny things. And that's the sort of standard we heard. I don't know if it made you laugh. It didn't particularly, you know, tickle me pink either. What I found sort of frustrating about the show was they did have one relatively funny, for me, candid camera moment, which is when they had this Irish water woman arriving at a door and knocking on the door and saying, here, I've got your refund here, sign this. And then they brought along a big truck filled with water going, okay, so where can we put the water, right? Now that's like perfectly fine,
yeah.
Funny,
yeah.
But it completely reneges on actually the premise of the show, which is about old people being old and therefore, you know, because that is a sketch that I could turn up at your door
and do, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So it fails to live up to the premise of the show. Another one that I thought was a bit strange was that kind of just for 2017 was this old woman stopped a guy in, it was on the campus in Trinity and was like, oh, can you read lines with me? And it was this sort of steamy erotic scene that they were reading. But like she was going, oh, put your leg on my, you know, put your hand on my leg. Can I kiss you on the lips kind of thing? And if the gender roles were reversed, you know.
Macho creepo, yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just an odd choice, I think. It was quite an old-fashioned show for an old-fashioned audience. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm some sort of ageist. I think there is definitely comedy to be plumbed from old people doing funny things. There's comedy to be plumbed from anybody doing anything funny. But for me, this was just really tired. You know, it was, I don't know how much legs are left in the candid camera format. And RTE are obsessed with it because they have given us plenty of them even over the last couple of years. Like last year, they had 2 new ones. One was called TMI, where they went around interviewing millennials and looking up their sort of social media profiles when they got their name and trying to wring awkward information out of them, which is actually not a bad premise, but it was completely lily-livered in its approach. And actually, what could you really get away with that premise? Not that much, because people are not going to consent to having their most embarrassing things put on the TV. And then they did another one called Scorchio, where Irish people on the beach in Magaluf were treated to more of the same kind of stuff. And this kind of candid camera stuff, it is obviously cheap to make, but it's cheap to watch. You know, it doesn't really offer any sort of returning value for money. It is a complete diminishing returns every time you tune in, because essentially it is one joke worn out over the same three or four or five sketches over three episodes. And is that sort of appointment TV viewing in this kind of climate of appointment TV that we are living in now? I don't think so.
Yeah. I suppose it lives or dies, though, depending on the originality of the ideas.
Very much so.
Because you can see how something like older people would maybe get away with more than perhaps younger people would, which is, you know, perhaps something to it.
Yes, but for me, there wasn't enough thought put into what will we do with these old people, rather than here's some old people, just make them do the same thing that they always do in this kind of show. I mean, we had a guy going up, that guy there we heard in the clip was going up to two younger women and saying, like, oh, I've got this Russian bride, I have to go bring her this ring for 25 grand.
Ah, right, yeah.
Another one was a guy in a job interview and the old man was falling asleep and the two women that he was interviewing were sort of like, what should we do? Should we wake him up? I mean, that's the comedy. Watching someone fall asleep on TV. I can watch old people fall asleep when I go home and visit my parents.
Yeah. Okay, James has to go home now. So hopefully if James's parents are listening, they'll stay awake and give him a piece of their mind. James, thanks a million. A happy new year to you.
Same
and we'll see you. We'll see you next week in the new year. James Dempsey there. We're going to take a break after that stuff.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.